There's a fascinating shift happening all over the world in places that have historically worked really hard to limit the number of outsiders moving in. Places like Australia, South Korea, even Japan. Currently, all of them are not just open to immigrants, they are actively courting them. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Lawmakers passing less restrictive immigration policies are specifically looking for workers to fill jobs at every skill level as birth rate declines and rapidly aging populations contribute to labor shortages. One glaring exception to the trend? The United States. But some economists worry that if we don't recognize the potential benefits of foreign nationals coming in to fill jobs, we might find ourselves in a very tough spot. Tom Fairless is a reporter covering Europe's economy and the European Central Bank in the Wall Street Journal's Frankfurt Bureau. His recent article for the Journal was headlined, What Everyone Except the U.S. Has Learned About Immigration. Tom, welcome to Think.
Hi there, Chris. Thanks for having me.
How does U.S. immigration policy at the moment broadly differ from what's happening in many other wealthy countries?
I think in most industrialized economies, the governments are loosening immigration laws to allow in more skilled and unskilled workers. So in Germany, where I am, the government is trying to attract as many as 500,000 net workers per year to make up for the shrinking population. In Canada, I think that the government is trying to attract 1.5 million over 3 years. These are very large numbers, historically speaking. And the U.S. is also, to be clear, still attracts a large number of immigrants and refugees. But the government isn't opening new legal pathways in the same way, at least, as some of these other industrialized countries.
Well, what's fascinating is that while we do make it possible, if not simple, for highly skilled and highly educated workers to relocate to the U.S., we make it nearly impossible for unskilled workers to move here legally. But like a lot of other places, we actually have need for both kinds of workers, right?
Yeah, that's right. And increasingly so. I think the U.S. population, like the population in lots of industrialized countries, is increasingly educated. And so there are fewer and fewer people who would be suited to lower skilled jobs. And so in the aftermath of the pandemic, the low skilled section is where you've seen the acute job vacancies in restaurants and bars, truck drivers. And some of these are providing skills that are crucial to higher skilled parts of the economy.
We keep hearing we are on the brink of a global recession, but at the moment your story was published, unemployment was at a record low on average across OECD countries. What effect do tight labor markets have on economies?
So one effect that economists think they have is that they drive up inflation, that the competition for workers pushes up wages. I mean, from another perspective, it is a sign of strength. I mean, in Europe, the unemployment rate is at a record low. Despite the war in Ukraine, despite the economic shocks that we've faced over the last couple of years, the number of job vacancies is exceeding the number of unemployed people in some places. It's a new problem, it reflects partly the way that the pandemic has scrambled these economies and encouraged people to leave the workforce. And it also reflects how the advanced economies are at a tipping point in terms of their working age population. They were increasing until now, but now they're starting to decrease as baby boomers retire and ever more quickly.
But in sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, the Caribbean, there are huge increases projected in the numbers of working age people in the coming decades. This seems like an easy imbalance to fix, right, so that everybody wins. Tell us a little bit more about how Germany, as one example, has been shifting its immigration policies specifically to attract blue-collar workers.
Yeah, the government introduced a new law a couple of years ago that made it easier for companies here to recruit people directly out of non-European countries like India. And so I visited some butcher's shops in southern Switzerland, in southern Germany near the Swiss border, that have hired Indian workers who do a training course firstly in India, and once they've achieved the necessary level of German, which is relatively low, they get imported here and they start working, cutting meat and serving customers in these butcher's shops. And some of these, interestingly, are Hindus who never previously were really around meat and never ate meat. I suppose that shows the kind of hunger for in parts of the world to come to the West, even for these lower skilled jobs.
Besides declining birth rates and aging populations, are there other factors making the supply of workers so very tight in wealthy countries?
I think it's essentially a demographic issue. Mm-hmm. I think we've reached the curve with baby boomers, and over the next 10 years, millions of them will leave the workforce. I think in Germany, they expect a gap of 7 million. In a workforce of about 40 million. I think that's really the thing that's driving all of this.
South Korea presently is looking for farm workers and also factory workers. Where is it looking in the world to recruit these folks?
I think they look especially in neighboring countries like Indonesia, places with kind of cheaper. I think in South Korea it's kind of even more acute than in other industrialized countries, that the education level is very high and there's very few people who want to do work in the fields or work in factories. They look to highly populated local countries especially.
Another big surprise for me is Japan, which historically has been quite resistant to foreign workers. What conditions in Japan finally convinced policymakers to create at least new kinds of visas to allow for migrant labor, if not permanent relocation?
It seems like it's a decision that came slightly before the pandemic, and Japan reached its sort of tipping point for the working age population slightly earlier than the rest of the West. And I think the working age population there is shrinking quite fast. I think it's kind of scheduled to fall by half or so over the coming decades, and so the government is opening the taps slightly. But when I speak to demographic experts in Japan, they say it's nothing like what it would be needed to stabilize the population. But there is some movement in this direction, probably to handle acute economic pressures in factories and farms, but. Nothing like the level that would be needed to stabilize the population.
What's so interesting is that now in Japan, it's not just about workers sort of coming for as long as they might be needed. Policymakers there are exploring laws that might allow people to stay for a longer term, might allow them to bring their families to join them.
Yeah, that's right. That's a shift, I think, especially countries in Asia. Have a much more skeptical attitude towards living with foreigners than we do in the US and Europe. It seems like they're opening up pathways for even lower skilled workers to come and stay with their families for longer periods, and also they're opening up new pathways for higher skilled foreign workers as well.
Labor migration has been pretty easy within the EU for some time. Why has that not been enough to keep a country like Spain supplied with all the workers it needs for particular industries?
Well, that's right. For the last two decades or so, 15 years or so, the opening up of Eastern Europe and the bringing the entry of countries like Poland into the EU created a steady flow of workers into Spain, especially into the UK and Ireland. But those flows are slowing and starting to reverse. Actually, during the pandemic, you got a lot of Eastern European workers who moved back to their home countries. And partly that reflects higher wages in Eastern Europe. Perhaps it was also linked to the pandemic that people felt they wanted to be closer to family. And so the flows from east to west are really not cutting it anymore in terms of filling the job vacancies. So countries like Spain are starting to look further afield. One of the examples I heard was that they're recruiting bus drivers or truck drivers in Morocco.
Wow.
And it's Spain is a particular case because it still has a very high unemployment rate. I think about 13%. And so there's some resistance among the trade unions to higher levels of migration, which the government says are needed to fill these job vacancies. And the unions say, well, why can't we just train some Spaniards and train some of the people who are unemployed? The government's response to that is that the Spaniards don't necessarily want to work in the sectors where there are vacancies, which are agriculture, or manufacturing, and maybe they don't have the skills to work in kind of higher skilled areas like TV production, where the Spanish economy is doing quite well.
Yeah, it's interesting that in a lot of places that have high unemployment, it's a youth unemployment problem. It seems like Spain's problem is on the other end of the life cycle.
Yeah, that's right. The migration minister, Escriva, told me that it's especially among 50-year-olds, around 50-year-olds. Perhaps it's a legacy of past crises that people lost their jobs in their late 30s or so and never found one. Those people are not necessarily going to go and start working in the fields to dig crops.
What are the pros and cons for the countries that are the source of this migrant labor? Do they benefit from sending people abroad who might send some money back home as, remittances? Or are those places in danger of suffering the kind of brain drain that could damage their future economic prospects?
I think there are, you could see both factors. I mean, the remittances are an important source of income for many developing countries. Especially with the dollar being very strong, it's compared with emerging market economies, which are quite weak at the moment. Remittances are an increasingly useful economic force. They can also, obviously, if they're losing their best talents overseas, it's not ideal for the domestic economy.
I don't know if in the course of your reporting you looked into this, but I'm curious about how people who are in a place that maybe doesn't have enough jobs, that have some skills that might be wanted overseas, how they choose a destination country.
I can think of one migrant I spoke to in Sri Lanka, the economy there was suffering from an economic crisis last year, and he told me that his favorite destination was Canada, and I think that's partly to do with maybe family ties. Countries have different kind of ideals in terms of where they would like to live, maybe. But he actually ended up in the UK, and that was because the UK government launched a new program to try and attract highly skilled migrants. And the government has designated 37 universities worldwide that it says, as long as you graduated from those in the last 5 years or so, we'll give you a visa. You can come and look for a job in the UK. So he ended up being tempted by this new UK visa scheme. And I think he thought the queue in Canada was just too long. And this UK fast stream visa was preferable to him.
Tom, what effect does migrant labor tend to have on wage rates within a country that welcomes a whole lot of foreign workers in a short period of time?
I think there is some dispute about this. And some economists would say that having a lot of extra migrant workers would tend to lower wages. The migrant workers might be willing to work for less, work harder for less money. The extra supply would tend to push down the price of labor. But that's actually quite contentious. And um, at the moment, that's a positive argument for migration. But in a different time, pushing down wages for the native population is not necessarily an easy sell. And experts have tried to say that actually migrants don't reduce the wages of the local population. So I think it's a contentious point. But certainly some of the current thinking around migration is that it could help to reduce this very high inflation rates that we're seeing everywhere.
The United States has not engaged in any really substantive immigration reform since the 1990s. Why do you think there has been so little movement to update policies that are now more than 30 years old?
I mean, migration in lots of countries is a very emotive issue, and there just does seem to be a gridlock in the U.S. that perhaps because of the illegal crossings. I think in the U.S. the discussion is very much about illegal versus legal migration, and there's a lot of concern about the illegal migrants. So-called illegal migrant population in the U.S. and the illegal border crossings, which sort of affects the discussion about legal migration and whether new legal channels should be opened, and makes it much more complicated for proponents when Americans are seeing thousands of people coming across the border illegally. It's more difficult to make that positive case for legal migration.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a large number of undocumented workers here, despite objections by people who worry these folks represent a drain on resources. First of all, is that true? Do undocumented immigrants cost a whole lot more than they contribute to the economy as a group?
I mean, it seems like they're probably supporting the economy. If anything, they're probably not using that many services, and they're not paying taxes probably, but they're probably helping to reduce inflation, helping to provide services more cheaply. Certainly, they're adding to the economy in some ways.
Is there something maybe about the current mess of a U.S. immigration system which makes it just incredibly difficult for all but the most skilled foreign workers to move here with legal permission? Is there something about it that works for the U.S. economy? Like, is it possible that it's not being fixed because although people complain about undocumented immigration, the number of undocumented immigrants we have here seems to work for the economy?
Yeah, I think that is a good point. And that's the exact point that some of the experts were telling me, that whereas in places like Australia, they don't have a border. It's a sea. It's the ocean if you want to get there. So anybody that's there, they have to actively welcome and bring in or accept. In the US, you have this kind of quite pliable, low-cost workforce that does address some of these issues about low-skilled work without anyone having to do anything, as you say.
What is Australia doing to try and lure workers to at least certain regions of the country?
Well, in Australia, the level of immigration is also contentious, just to be clear. The latest polls suggest that a plurality of people, more people want to reduce the level of immigration than want to increase it. But I spoke to one of the ministers in Western Australia, which is a big state, which has lots of mineral resources that like lithium and cobalt and nickel that are used to build electric batteries for the kind of electrical revolution, electric vehicle revolution. And he told me they just have more work than people, and they just need to, they need more people for everything, for public services, for the police, for construction of houses, for the everything, every person they would welcome. And so he took a kind of road trip to the UK and Ireland, where he was advertising jobs in pubs and different places to try and attract, he said, 30,000 Brits to go and work in in Australia to fill these vacancies. But I mean, that's his initiative, and those people would still have to be cleared through the central Australian immigration system, which remain, I mean, while welcoming, it remains relatively restrictive. So that's a case of a kind of regional governor going out and because of the specific problems he faces to try and increase immigration when the actual Australian population is still skeptical. It's remains to be convinced, some of them at least.
Are the arguments against immigration, when they come from just the sort of population level, are they about changing culture as much as they are about any effects on the economy?
Certainly, that seems to be where the debate is in the U.S. That it's much more the debate gets played out in cultural terms rather than in economic terms, and in parts of Europe, it's the same. That people are worried about the changes to the society. In Germany, where you had the lots of immigrants from North Africa and from Muslim countries, I think there is some. The latest polls also show that Germans are a majority of Germans is skeptical about higher levels of immigration. So I think it's then on the politicians to try and the businesses, I suppose, to try and make the economic argument. But whether that really resonates with people, or whether it's more the kind of emotional arguments that resonate, maybe it varies over time as well with the state of the economy.
I was really interested to read that some U.S. governors are trying to, persuade Congress to give states more discretion over legal immigration than they currently have.
Yeah, that's right. The governors of the Republican governors of Utah and Indiana are both trying this initiative to give themselves more flexibility to bring in more migrant workers. And I think what they were telling me, what these people in these states were telling me, is that they used to get a kind of natural migration from other states with higher unemployment rates. But now that the US unemployment rate is 3.4%, those people aren't arriving from other states anymore. And their own, the young people in Utah and Indiana are maybe moving to other places. And so it's just very difficult now to find workers. And so they thought this state level mechanism might be a good one. But I think they were skeptical about the chances of getting it through Congress.
It is interesting to think about individual U.S. states competing with one another for immigrant labor.
I think for some of the North Dakota and these kind of states, I think it is very difficult. And I spoke to a former governor in North Dakota who was saying that they're actually trying to bring in migrants from Ukraine through one of President Biden's recent, I think it's Uniting for Ukraine program, because that seems like one of the only routes to get more workers in.
And some of those Ukrainian migrants, some of whom have been refugees who've arrived here since the start of the Russian invasion, they're working in the oil fields in North Dakota, right?
I think that's the plan. Yeah, I think maybe a few dozen have arrived already, and they're looking to recruit more. I think the oil fields is maybe the high value industry that really needs those workers right now.
Setting aside people who arrive here because they are refugees, I mean, migrants move anywhere in the world because there are jobs, right? Is that the primary motivator?
I think so. I suppose jobs, safety, and with Ukrainians, I mean, they've fled to neighboring countries. Some have actually fled to Russia. I think a lot of them are trying to build a more permanent home, and so they tend to go towards the places where they think they could build a future, definitely.
So as you've noted, even in countries where governments are opening up migration pathways, citizens are not always excited about these prospects. What are countries learning about how they can address what their populations might perceive to be alarming cultural shifts brought about by bringing people of different backgrounds in? Like, how are they trying to help these folks fit in and succeed?
If I think of Europe, the German government does an enormous amount, spends an enormous amount on language training, kind of cultural courses. Germany's had millions of refugees arriving, so it's extremely experienced at this. And I mean, these things generally seem to work. There are small issues that you have, but I mean, on the whole, it seems like a kind of peaceful, pretty peaceful situation.
For countries, Tom, that are actively trying to bring more foreign workers in, what are they using to entice them? Are there actual, you know, benefits besides moving for people who might be convinced to go somewhere else for a job?
I think in most places, the demand is just extraordinary from the kind of less developed economies. I don't think they need to. It's more just, you know, picking and choosing who you accept as a kind of rich country. I think also the difference in wage levels between the West and the developing world has actually increased over the last few years. The emerging markets, I think, have come through this shock not as strongly as places like the US, which has come through very, very well. Suddenly Australia are kind of rolling out the red carpet for Brits who are moving to the Western Australia region and the mining region there, and they're trying to streamline some of the visa applications. But I think they think that the kind of wage levels they can offer are attractive enough. So, maybe some help with some of the bureaucracy.
It is interesting to think about, you know, one developed country trying to poach workers from another, economically wealthy country. Are countries starting to pay attention to what is necessary to keep native-born workers from leaving for better jobs elsewhere?
I mean, it's a good question. It didn't seem to be the main concern that I saw. For instance, where the fact that the Australian minister was in Britain trying to poach workers didn't seem to raise much concern in Britain in the government. And I think the level of migration to Britain is very high. So it seems like it's not a concern. I mean, in particular industries like the health industry, perhaps it causes problems that, if you have a shortage of doctors, that does seem to be a concern in Britain. But generally, there doesn't seem to be a kind of overly antagonism between these countries at the moment, at least.
It's interesting to think about countries where lawmakers have one idea about immigration and the general population has another. What have you observed in terms of how policymakers try to communicate their thoughts on the benefits of immigration to a populace that may only see potential downsides?
I think the communication is extremely difficult. And this is what the Spanish migration minister said to me, it's one of the toughest sells, I suppose, that they have. Our unemployment rate is high, but we need to bring in these extra people. And in the UK as well, where the Conservative government for years has been talking about bringing down immigration levels, and that was one of the drivers of Brexit and the UK would take back control of its borders, and now immigration is at a record levels, and it's a tricky thing to explain, because there does seem to be this skepticism everywhere of very high levels of immigration.
Is that just, I mean, is it human nature? Is it people's resistance to change? Is it racism?
Probably that plays a part, but I think the experts were telling me that people have quite nuanced views of immigration. That they're not necessarily don't want anybody to come. They're happy for people to come who are going to bring useful skills, who are going to create companies or look after their old parents. They're especially worried about control of the borders. If they feel like suddenly they're being sort of swamped, or that the culture is changing, or something is changing too quickly, and they can't stop it. They can't reverse what's happened. I think that's when people start to get anxious about immigration. But I think it's not necessarily irrational. If it is true that immigration reduces wages, then I suppose that could be another reason that people would be anxious about that.
Tom, is there some way that we can strip partisanship from our consideration of the ideal position on immigration?
It's a good question. There are attempts to do this, and I think especially when the economic need is very pressing, it possibly can work that you get efforts across the political aisle to people agree that the economy just needs these extra workers. So I think if there is ever a time where those kind of efforts can work, it's probably now, at a time when you have 10 million job vacancies in the US and 5 million unemployed. If not now, then when, I suppose.
So is there some hesitation for countries welcoming immigrants for business purposes because they're worried about what happens if they see a downturn? You know, we're talking about the need to fill jobs now. We're talking about inflation. We're also talking about potentially a slowdown on the horizon. Is there a worry that suddenly these new immigrants who've arrived there won't have jobs if things go south?
I suppose that could become a factor. Yeah, there does seem to be a lot of anxiety in different industrialized economies about growth and about the future. At the moment, that anxiety and the economic weakness hasn't translated into an increase in unemployment, which is very unusual. So, and people are still switching jobs a lot in the US and also more in places like Europe where they haven't traditionally done that, which suggests a certain confidence in that people can continue to find work. But I think certainly if the economy does turn down, that will change the attitudes towards immigration.
Do the countries currently encouraging or at least opening up to immigration, do a lot of them have thoughts on how to bring in low-skilled workers and then build their skills up once they arrive in those places? So maybe they start doing jobs that just take a human body, and then they kind of move up over the course of their careers to doing things that require a little more training.
From the efforts I saw, it was more that that countries are trying to import, trying to attract the people to fill specific job vacancies rather than having a longer term plan. So like the butchers in southern Germany, that's something that a sector which really depends on immigrants. And I don't think there's any sense that the German government is going to try and train them to become software engineers or something else. Although interestingly, the people I spoke to actually were quite educated. One of them had a degree, one of these Indians had a degree in computer engineering. Another one mentioned that they wanted to at some point become a web developer. So I think the issue is that there's so many people want these jobs in the West that the West can really pick and choose among. And so you get this strange situation where you get highly qualified people going and working as butchers in southern Germany, which seems like it could create problems in the future.
Yeah, with no disrespect to the skill it takes to be a good butcher, it does seem very like it would be very frustrating to have a computer science degree and go work as a butcher.
I mean, the people I spoke to, you know, they sounded very loyal. They said they liked their employers and they were very nice. But they, I do wonder how long they're going to spend in that profession. I mean, they, I mean, it seems more basic, more kind of simple than the skills that they have. And so I suppose that's one of the issues around this type of immigration is that you maybe create sectors that are dependent on kind of lower wage migrant labor. That's the concern that some of the academics have. And that something that's you see as a short-term solution to a short-term problem actually becomes a persistent need for migrant workers to fill those jobs.
Is there some way possibly for countries to work together to share migrant workers? For example, you know, northern nations in the northern hemisphere bringing in migrants during harvest and then helping them get back to the southern hemisphere when they need help at the opposite time of year. I mean, is anybody thinking on an international level about this kind of thing?
Not that I know of. They do have rotating migration, as you say. Spain, for example, brings people in for a few months a year from North Africa and then releases them for the rest of the year. But I think that's purely in Spain's interest. I don't think that they're thinking these people can go and help North Africa for the rest of the time. I think they think we want workers who aren't going to stay here. But it's more of a temporary situation. But yeah, I can't think of any international effort to kind of spread these people around.
I suppose you also need to allow, you know, to preserve the autonomy of the people doing the work, right? We can't just think of them, and I feel like my question may have accidentally implied this. We can't think of them as simply cogs in a machine.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's an issue that countries have dealt with in the past as well. Germany in the 1970s brought in a lot of workers from Southern Europe and from Turkey to fill manufacturing jobs as a temporary solution. They called them guest workers. And then over time, it became clear that actually these guests were going to stay and they had their real people. They had families and they weren't going to just do the job and go home. They wanted to build lives here. And so, yeah, there's a large Turkish community now in Germany. But that's right. This is immigration is a long-term thing, and you have to treat these people like people and not like cogs in a machine.
Yeah, I'm thinking too, and this didn't come up in your piece, so if you haven't looked into it, we don't have to go too much further. But you know, countries in the Middle East that bring in so-called guest workers, but don't give them any kind of path to citizenship or even permanent residency. I mean, on the one hand, you get someone to do the job you need filled right away, but if the ultimate goal is to create a cohesive society, it seems like a system like that is working at cross purposes.
Yeah, that's right. It does seem like they're very unusual relationships that they have that seem more like servant sort of servants that come without their families. And then, yeah, it doesn't seem like a way that you could grow a strong society. That's for sure.
So you've mentioned Germany, and I don't know if you actually went and observed those butchers working with immigrant butchers working with experienced butchers born in Germany. I'm curious about the relationships that form between people who come from very different cultures, who, you know, may mostly speak different languages. How well do they work together?
I did observe the butchers in southern Germany, and I mean, it seemed fine. It seemed great. The employers seemed very happy. They seemed to want more of it, and the workers seemed to get on. I mean, there's I guess, but there's you know, there's a small community in this region of Indian workers. I mean, they were telling me that they haven't seen any opposition from local communities either. I think there are a lot of old people who like to have younger people around. So yeah, it seems at the moment it seems very harmonious. I suppose it depends partly on scale as well, but these are very, at the moment, they're small projects, and it's only a few hundred who are going down this path at the moment. If it was many, many more, then perhaps those relationships would change.
In some European countries, Tom, I mean, France comes to mind, workers are often at odds with the government over retirement ages. Do any of these countries use the prospect of immigrant workers coming in who might not be so attached to a young retirement age and sort of leverage that against workers who don't want to work past a particular age?
I haven't seen that. That's an interesting idea. What, bring in foreigners who want to work until they're 70? Yeah, I did hear in Spain that part of the rationale for bringing in a lot of foreign workers is to pay taxes for these social security systems. And I think, yeah, there's a recognition that they're quite the systems, the retirement systems in Europe are quite expensive, and yeah, they perhaps need more funding than they've dedicated in the past.
If the United States does not sort of come around and put itself more aggressively in the mix of countries looking to recruit foreign workers, do you think there could be a tipping point after which it becomes challenging for the U.S. to bring in enough foreign labor? Or does this particular country and this economy remain enough of a draw that, for lack of a better word, we can afford to hold off on changing immigration policy?
I did hear some concerns among immigration attorneys that places like Canada were attracting the best and brightest, and I just think the U.S. does retain an incredible allure for the rest of the world, and I don't really see that changing. I mean, I think, yeah, it's true that historically, immigration has been at the heart of America's kind of economic strength, its economic success, and it's really what set America apart from, especially from Europe. And so it is strange to see, places like Germany actually overtake the US in the immigrant share of the population, in the recent immigrant share. Even though the US was built by immigrants, and Germany is not that at all, and has only recently actually come to think of itself as an immigrant receiving country. And I think immigration could be part. It is kind of America's trump card. And if you think about the economic competition with China, for instance, China is somewhere where they don't seem to embrace large-scale migration. There doesn't seem to be much prospect that they will, and so that seems to be a place where America could keep its keep you know keep an economic edge and an economic advantage. So it is curious to see to see. I'll be curious to see what happens, and if the U.S. does turn more in that direction. I think the Biden administration is taking steps to increase legal migration, but it's more of a sort of backdoor route, sort of accepting, tolerating people from countries at risk in Latin America or in Europe. And it is a pathway that a lot, hundreds of thousands of people have come over the last few years to the U.S. But it's not an open embrace of more legal pathways in the way that other countries are doing.
Having looked at the way economically advanced countries around the world are starting to change immigration policies, is there one in particular that stands out to you as really getting these policies right?
I mean, I think Canada has done very well at see at allowing its popu seeing its population embrace immigration at least. So I mean, if you want to think of a country where immigration is extremely popular, you'd think of Canada. So they must be doing something right. And I mean, what that is probably that they've been targeting the highest skilled. That's certainly what the academics say. And I mean, most people would be happy to admit astronauts or scientists or doctors who they think are making society better. I think there's the resistance really comes over sort of lower skilled workers who people think are either competing for their own job or maybe taking government resources when that they could have. So I think Canada has an extremely high migration rate that seems to be quite popular. So I think its approach seems to be working well.
Tom Fairless is a reporter who covers Europe's economy and the European Central Bank in the Wall Street Journal's Frankfurt Bureau. His recent article for the journal was titled, "What Everyone Except the U.S. Has Learned About Immigration." Tom, this has been very interesting, and I appreciate you spending this time with us.
Thanks so much, Chris. This was great.
You can find us on Facebook and on Instagram just by searching for KERA Think. You can also become a subscriber to our podcast wherever you like to get podcasts. Just look for KERA Think, sign up. It is free and you'll get it every day. You can also catch the podcast on our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.